Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment, A New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet, and what can I say? So much going on. Well, moving right along for this so-called January 29th, we are going to talk about several things tonight, and certainly I'm sure some of them will be of some interest to you. At any rate, again, we thank you for tuning in to this segment of New Day as we are now reaching our 13th straight year of nonstop, independent communications, information, etc. Yep, 13 years, y'all. Now, you got to know. I mean, that takes a lot, and we've done it consistently, independently. So I just want to make sure that, you know, folks can begin to really grasp the kind of work that we've been doing over these past few 13 years with New Day, and of course with MWM, that being New Day being one of our official communications media apparatuses. And so very soon we're going to announce our New Day YouTube channel. Yep, it's coming, finally. We're ready to go to some of the next levels to bring you information, communications, and so forth that we need to bring. We're going to be talking very soon with Brother Michael Thompson, who we had on our program some time back. He's going to be working with us to help develop some of our new media tools. Of course, he is the founder of something called Our Black Truth. And, you know, he ran into some things that he wasn't anticipating, given the fact that Google and Apple and all these other people have really the control over certain media pieces. And so, you know, we can talk all we want to about being independent or, you know, but at the end of it all, if we are not literally owning and controlling certain things, we are still going to be subjected to the whims and fancies of others. So as we proceed with MWM, I can tell you certainly we're going to be looking at in every way possible what has to be done for the future to secure the capability for us to be able to literally and realistically have our own to a greater extent. All right, so as we proceed in establishing the MWM Universal Movements, of course, we're looking at developing greater allies and interaction throughout the diaspora, all across the board, because we have to now move things forward. And with that said, we're going to move forward with tonight's program. We want to tell you that Sister Tawanda should be hopefully joining us soon, and she's going to, of course, give us a Be More report. But also tonight, we wanted to share with you that, hold on one moment, I just had a little computer glitch here that I've got to reboot. Again, we've been having quite some difficulties with some of our technical things, which is really, really very interesting, but, you know, y'all know how that go. At any rate, we do plan to talk to Sister Tawanda very shortly, and of course, she's going to give us the Be More report, but also give us some insight into this past week's, 444, right, meaning 444 weeks for West Wednesdays. I mean, that's just incredible and wonderful. And so we're going to talk with Sister Tawanda about that very shortly. Also, for tonight, we want to open up the phone lines for you all, because one of our segments that we're going to be doing monthly has to do with focusing on self-determination, Black self-determination, and other aspects. And for tonight, it's going to be Black political power. What does that mean? What does it look like? What should it be? We want to start having that kind of dialogue so that we can begin to put the formations in place to a greater extent that we need. Now, we know for the most part, the political machinery in most of our communities is just, you know, what can I say? Between the sellouts, between the manipulation and the trickery and all the other stuff, it's just, you know, really hard to maneuver in our communities on a political level. You know, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and the Boule parties and all this other stuff, they got this stuff on lockdown for the most part. But we still got to try to do what we can do. With that said, we're going to start having more conversations about how to develop greater political power, not, of course, just in the electoral area, but all across the board. As it has been said, everything is political in some way, shape, fashion, or form. Therefore, we need to act like we know. Now, one of the other things we're going to look at in connection to the political thing is, because we recognize that how some things kind of fell apart was because we didn't have, shall I say, accountability mechanisms in place. So sometimes when we did have a candidate or somebody that we put in office, and you know, we really believed that they were going to do certain things, and maybe they even believed they were going to do certain things. But because we did not have proper accountability mechanisms in place, people got swarmed up into the regular stuff and or just decided to go that way anyways. There's variables. But nevertheless, because there were not ample accountability mechanisms in our communities to keep people honest, and I don't mean just in terms of money. I mean, you know, focused for our best interest. Because we didn't have that, oftentimes they ended up doing what the heck they wanted to do or whatever they felt they needed to do to survive or whatever the situation is. The point is, we've learned, and now we're going to proceed accordingly. And so part of our plan and agenda is to make certain that now we have better accountability mechanisms in place, not just in terms of the political scene, but in terms of our movements. I learned that one the hard way. So I'm going to tell you more about that a little later on as well. But at any rate, Again, we should be talking with Sister Tawanda very shortly. And also, we're going to talk with Dr. Gail Frazier. Dr. Gail Frazier, of course, is connected to the National Black Agenda Consortium. And if you're not familiar with that group, but you know, the work that they've produced, well, you will become familiar with it tonight and in the future, because we are going to be presenting the National Black Agenda, you know, again, as something that our people can begin to examine to help get us to the next step. There's a lot of different things out there, not many, but some, that you know, is designed to try to, you know, people talk about unity. I always say, you know, it's a good conversation, but you have no plan of action to make it happen, usually. So we're going to be producing and presenting some things that, you know, at least has the potential to generate or bring about greater unity, for lack of a better word. With that, we also can tell you that with MWM, we have a conference coming up in March. It's our first conference for 2022, A Million Black Women Rising Federation. And the first few days of that conference will be free and open to everyone. The last 3 days of that conference will be for members only. We're now locking it down. You know, we've done a whole lot of things for anyone and everyone. Unfortunately, sometimes that allowed us to get stabbed in the back. But now we have to focus in such a way that some parts of what we're doing is going to be based on some other things. So the last 3 days of the conference will be for members only. They will be the only ones that will be able to see, you know, certain operation things on paper and other kinds of things that are coming. We have a year-long kind of calendar that has been developed, and we will be presenting some of that in addition to some of the actual applications of what's going to happen with things such as the Harriet Tubman Bicentennial Jubilee, of course, the Million Woman March 25 reunion, but there's certain other components, again, that only the members will be getting a glimpse of at this stage. So we'll be talking more a little later on about membership and other things. And again, we encourage sisters to, you know, support in whatever way you can, but definitely get involved in whatever way you can as well. There's no reason today why women, black women, cannot, will not support an entity of black women and have demonstrated their capability, tenacity, and so forth. So now, you know, we're going to really see, because there's been a lot of talk about what we need to do and blah, blah, blah. Well, we're going to see who's going to put up and who needs to shut up. Anyway, Senator Bill Owens, who I had the opportunity to meet a few years ago when I went to Gary, Indiana, for a commemoration of the Black National Black Political Convention that took place in Gary, Indiana several years ago. Of course, this year actually marks the 50th year anniversary of the first National Black Political Conference or convention, actually, and it took place in Gary, Indiana. 50 years ago, I think it happened in March. This year, there is the 50-year commemoration, and that will take place in Newark, New Jersey. It's now slated to take place in August. It was originally slated to take place in April, but now it's going to be in August. And again, I will be involved in that to some degree, I think. But at any rate, Mayor Chokwe Antar Lumumba and Mayor Raj Baraka are the conveners of this upcoming 50-year anniversary commemoration of the National Black Political Convention. Now, for those who do not know, that's where Jesse Jackson came out of initially, before Push, Rainbow, and all the other stuff, and some other very key people, which you will hear more about. It was really incredible for that time period. Again, we're talking about 50 years ago. But we need to look at and examine What do we need to do now? And since this upcoming 50-year anniversary is coming, it behooves us to be prepared so that those of us who are interested in introducing, you know, some plans of action or whatever, we need to be ready to do so. MWM will be, and again, this is why we're also going to be talking to Dr. Frazier tonight in regards to the National Black Agenda. Right. And again, MWM has the Black Print Agenda 25. So, you know, we know that there's other groups and organizations that have action plans. So for MWM, we're going to be inviting others to come and share their action plan and whatever other information that has some real oomph to it in regards to bringing us forward. Utilizing the Nguzasaba principles and concepts, but also connecting that to the principles of Ma'a. That's our strategy and formula that we will be presenting. And so we will, again, invite others to do so as well. Okay, before we get to talk with Dr. Gail Frazier, what we'd like to do is share with you a little bit about Senator Bill Owens. Now, many may not have been familiar with him. Again, he was based out of the Massachusetts area. He was a senator there. But it's important that we highlight the work of folk who really were serious and who also really did some wonderful things on our behalf, who became an elected official or were involved in that, but at the same time were also a Black man and a Black woman, okay? And so we want to make sure that we do what we're supposed to do in sharing that kind of information with others. And so Senator Bill Owens, William Bill Owens, was one of those people. He was 84 when he passed, and he had been ill already. And when I say already, and that is because it was reported that he was said to have caught COVID, just a few days or so before his passing. So, of course, being at the age that he was, and of course already having some medical problems, he apparently succumbed, so they say, to the COVID-19 situation. Again, this man was really, I'm going to say, a Black man first, and this is what Brother Dave Richardson also said when he was alive, and he was a state rep here in Philly. He made it very clear, and he did a video in one of his speeches, rather. You hear him say he's a Black man first and then a state representative, you know, after that and other things after that. Well, Senator Bill Owens, I dare say, was also from particular grouping. I met him personally, and from the very first moment we met, we hit it right off. I was shaking the room up, and he was loving it, and then he shook the room up. And again, we were able to stay in touch over the years, not as much as I had hoped, but nevertheless, we did. And it was always, just wonderful to talk with an elder who not only had a level of experience in certain things, but who loved Black people, loved struggle, and really, showed it and so forth and so on. And so he was actually the first Black senator for the state of Massachusetts, right? I'd like to share with you, and by the way, I have a picture that I found when I was doing the research. He arrested him and Dick Gregory, and Dick Gregory's wife, Mother Lillian, got arrested in, let me see, it was in 1974, I think it was, in fighting against apartheid. They got arrested, right? That was the kind of Black man we're talking about, elected official. So what I'd like to do, family, if you will allow me, I would just like to share some of a speech that I found that Senator Irwin gave some time back. He was an avid person when it came to advocacy for countries such as Haiti, which is this particular speech that you're going to hear. He will reference some things in regards to Haiti. But he was just a champion all across the board in a lot of different ways. So please bear with me. Give me about 10 minutes for this speech, this presentation, so that you can hear the senator who is now an ancestor, William Bill Owens. And so check this out. And then after that, we should be ready to talk with Sister Gail Frazier, who also knew him and will share some things about him, but also share with us about the National Black Agenda. But folks, listen to this for a minute.
Who since the 70s has been a tireless advocate for better jobs and better education for the people of Boston, and who has developed close ties with the Haitian community. Senator Bill Owens.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. Pardon me. It's a great opportunity for me to be here with you this evening. You know, before we get started, I just have something I want to tell you that happened during the training period in the police department. There was a gentleman that most of you know who went through the academy. And, you know, when you work all day trying to get through with your coursework, you want to get up and go home. But this fella always had a lot of questions that he wanted to ask. And this particular day, they were all ready to go home after their training. And the instructor said, "No more questions, please." He said, "Mr. Instructor, I have one more question." And of course, everyone looked around and took a deep sigh. He said, "But it's in three parts." So he asked a three-part question. He always asked the question. And because of it, on the way here tonight, you know, I was running a little behind. I thought I was anyway. And I was running a little fast. And I got pulled over by a state trooper. And he came up and he said, "Let me have your license and registration." I said, "Officer, if you just hold up a minute, I'd like to talk with you. And I'm a very good friend of some of the people in the police department. In fact, I know one of the gentlemen who used to be a deputy mayor in the city of Boston, and I wish you wouldn't give me this ticket." He said, "Where are you going?" For the life of me, I couldn't think of coming to Lombardo's, and I couldn't think of coming to the Haitians United. So I said, "I'm going to meet Eve Debreville." He said, "Give me back your license and registration." I only say that in jest because I know Eve is a great guy, and I just want to take this opportunity to thank Eve and several other people who assisted me this evening, including Professor Mark Crew, Lenine, many of you know Melissa, Vincent, and Beatrice Danfavillo. And I'd like to just say that Representative Shirley Owens Hicks wanted to be here, but she has a terrible cold and could not be here. Asked me to extend her best wishes and congratulations to you this evening. To the members of the High Table, to the chairman, I am extremely grateful for being here this evening. The success of the Haitian revolt was a source of pride to many blacks in the whole world, especially in the United States, where it served as an example for the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement also was called the Black Freedom Movement, the Negro Movement, and the Second Reconstruction. In 1774, the First Continental Congress met to protest British intrusion into American affairs. A year later, the nation was at war. Thomas Jefferson was commissioned to write a justification for the colonial actions. And these are the words he wrote. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." It's very interesting how Jefferson wrote those words. And he was very supportive of the French in the French Revolution and the fact that they had to commit violence. But he was not supportive of the Haitian Revolution as we know it. 198 years ago, Haiti became the first black republic, the only self-made black republic in the world. It was not by, yes, go ahead and applaud for yourself. It was not by accident, but by careful planning by the greatest general of all times, Toussaint Louverture. I'm told that I have to move it along, so you'll forgive me. But Thomas Jefferson, who really accepted, as I said, the violence in France, decided with the founding fathers of these United States of America that they could not afford to have Haiti as an independent nation that deal on the world stage with the American Revolution and the French Revolution. So as a result, they decided to silence Haiti. Even as we speak, the silence continues. It would be in the interest of America to embrace Haiti, tell the world that it was a good job, well done. Praise Haiti for having the courage, the intelligence, the foresight, and the staying power to take the yoke of slavery off its neck. financial backing that is needed, support the people, and become a partner of the people of Haiti. Tell the world, Mr. President, we're calling on you right now to tell the world that Louisiana Purchase would not have happened if it had not been for Napoleon's defeat by Haiti.
And
Belgium. And let me also add that the whole world knows that Haiti is not just for Haitians. Haitians is for the world. In, I'm wrapping it up now. In Massachusetts, we also have some great leaders. In Massachusetts, are you aware that Manny D'Amperville was the first Haitian police officer in this entire state? Today you have 26 Haitian American police officers in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It's not enough, but it's more than we had, not more and not as much as we're gonna get. East Amperville was the first deputy mayor in this state of Haitian origin. Judge Leroy, the first Haitian judge. And your state representative, Marie St. Fleur, being the first state representative in Massachusetts. My final words are these. One writer said, human greatness is classified in three divisions. First, greatness of administration. Second, greatness of organization. And third, greatness of discovery. In all three divisions, Haiti has advantage. Her Toussaint Louverture, her Dessalines, her Christophine, her Peugeot, her Ricard, and many others that I cannot have the time to speak to tonight. You who are here have a responsibility. Unite with me and mine so that we may become one of mine. My father said to all of us that there are two kinds of people in the world, those that plan for the future and those that plan the future. Those that plan for the future live within the society that other people have planned for them. Those who plan the future are the ones who plan the society. And I say to you tonight, let's plan our future. You and me together. And I thank you very much for this opportunity.
Indeed, family. So that, of course, was Senator William Bill Owens. And as you can tell, as I said, certainly the type of representation that we need to have, you don't see it much today. And that particular presentation or speech or whatever was at least 20 years ago. Okay, so you can hear the type of fervor, the type of intent, you could tell the genuineness of what he was saying. Take a look at these people today, many of them in our communities throughout the U.S. that are so-called elected officials, and you will not hear that depth. You will not hear that type of commitment. And again, with him, when you know, if you should take the time to examine some of his history, you will see the actual work that he did, including being one of the first to make the effort to get reparations legislation through the House. We're talking about in the 1980s on the senatorial level. He did that in the 1980s. So while now it's a good conversation and people are doing various things, which is fine, we have to definitely make certain that we give kudos to and recognition to folks who came before us who was doing that work when it wasn't as popular and certainly did not have some of the motives that we are now seeing today, that they genuinely believed and wanted to see us have reparations, reparatory justice, and all that goes with it. And so, again, we salute ancestor William Bill Owens. His examples are certainly some that we have embraced and will work to continue as we now proceed with bringing forward the Million Woman Party and other components that will now begin to focus on the advancement of our liberation. And note the sustainability of that liberation and justice. So again, family, thank you for allowing me to share with you some of the words of Senator Bill Owens. So now we're going to go to our live line. And we're going to talk with Dr. Gail Frazier, who is joining us from Chicago, who knew Senator Owens, and it was because of she and Brother Reeven that I was able to become acquainted with him, because they were involved in the commemoration that I mentioned earlier in regards to the anniversary that was held in Gary, Indiana, for in recognition of the first national black political convention. And again, this was a time period when folks really kind of meant what they were saying. See, this stuff now going on today, Black Lives Matter, and all, oh my gosh. Oh, anyway, I'm going to bring in our sister, Dr. Gail Frazier, and have her to share with you some of her thoughts about Senator Owens, but also to share with you information about a project and program that she's been working with for several years and is an integral part of, and that is the National Black Agenda Consortium. So without further ado, let's bring in our sister, Dr. Gail Frazier. Hey, Dr. Frazier, how you be tonight?
Hey there. How are you tonight? How are you, my dear sister? The love sister, if I can say. And, you know, I just thank God for you. I'm just going to say this to whoever is listening. You are a true sister indeed, because you have been one of the major supporters of the National Black Agenda Consortium, the National Black Agenda. And one of the things that I can say to your credit, in addition to a whole bunch of things that I can say, but specifically, is that you have really been pushing the Black Agenda, in addition to all of the other great work that you have done and the group has done. And you're always on the front line trying to make a difference for the lives of our people. So I want to say kudos to you. We have the utmost regard and respect for you and the years of work and labor that you have put forth to make a difference to help our people. So I just want to say I love you, sister to sister, for real, you know. Even though we don't get a chance to talk much, and we can connect when we can, because I know sometimes I'm not always able to connect with what's going on, but you better know in the spirit we are connected. And the National Black Agenda Consortium also is connected to the work that you're doing. That's the reason why we reached out to you to ask you to please prepare a piece for on the women's component, because we're updating the 2020 agenda for this year. So as soon as you pin that and get it to us, we will make sure that it's included, and then, of course, you will receive a copy of the book once it's revised and revamped and everything. So I just wanted to say that to the listening audience and just how much we appreciate you, because we need more people like you who are willing to speak the truth and then also support other black organizations that's trying to do the work. So I want to say that to you. I know I've said a lot, but I wanted to put that in there.
Oh, no, I appreciate that, and that's what this platform is about, speak truth to power, and that's what we're for. And we're now in our 13th year straight of doing this radio program, 13 straight years. So that's what we're here for. But I thank you, my sister. And listen, by the way, we will be introducing, as a part of the Million Woman March 25-year anniversary. We will be introducing, this year's it. It most certainly is. And, you know, it's hard to gauge some things right now because of COVID, but we are literally planning a year-long event, a year-long commemoration. And so we'll be doing, we're coming to Chicago, we're coming to Detroit, Baltimore, because, you know, again, we're not going to just do a one-day kind of thing. That's not it anymore. We're building a movement, and so we're going to move.
Absolutely. Well, you know, please make sure when you, however you decide to write the piece, incorporate that, because when we've had our meetings and everything, we certainly would want you to place in there about the Million Woman March and, you know, whatever whatever is placed on your heart to do, but we want you to really focus on that because that was historic. And so, you know, thank you so much. And then thank you again for having me to come on to talk about the honorable and beloved Bill Owens.
Yes.
I'm telling you, he was a phenomenal, phenomenal man. I mean, I loved him so much. He was greatly beloved, and he was a true warrior. And listening to credits that you were given to him, I don't know of any other, I mean, if you can count them as far as that having the grit and the determination and the fire in his voice and the actions behind what he's saying, you don't see that today. You know, a lot of our individuals, unfortunately, they kowtow down to this, you know, being trying to be politically correct and all of that. But Senator Owens was not like that. And even up in his old, you know, as he had aged and everything, and we would talk on the phone and everything, and he would tell me about, you know, his engagements with things in Africa, you know, regarding reparations. He's all of the things that he's done. And also he would always bring to my attention, and some of your listeners may not know, is that he's the one who gave Representative Conyers, I think he was a representative, I don't think he was a senator, but John Conyers, the information to even put the reparations component out there, even though the credit goes to Conyers, he's the one who gave it to him, and he would tell me that all the time. And he was heavily connected with Lumumba. He would talk about Chukwe, Lumumba, and different ones and everything like that. And his brother, he was a formidable person. I mean, even in his old age, just what I'm saying, even in his old age, he was still pressing. And he was the granddaddy for the National Black Agenda, the National Black Agenda Consortium. And if I can add to this, in 2004, the Boston Group did the National Black Agenda. Some individuals may not know that. He was the person who was over that, the National Black Agenda. And so what happened is that the ones that was done in Boston, they framed it out really well. But Senator Owens commissioned us here in Chicago because we were the only ones that was actually sustaining it. And he gave us permission to keep doing it. And so every time we would do things and whatever, we would always let him know what's going on. And he had made a comment, you know, about the people, you know, his group, I guess, that was working on it in Boston did not continue to do that work, but that we picked up the gauntlet and we kept doing the work. And so Senator Owens, I'm telling you, words can't express. And when I heard of his passing, because I tried to call him a couple of times and it kept talking about his phone was disconnected or wasn't in service. And I'm like, no, you know, and he had made his transition. And sis, I want to say what makes it even more, if I could say disheartening or whatever, but he passed on my birthday. And so, you know, that's something, And so I sit back and I think, and but, you know, he will always be in our hearts. And I want to really, really, really thank you for honoring him and honoring his memory. We're going to have a special memorial that we're going to, a memoriam that we're going to place in this upcoming Black Agenda release. And then we're planning on trying to do something special. His sister at the present time, they're working on getting the arrangements and everything. And because his name is so well known, and like you already said, with this COVID stuff, you know, going forth with the memorial, I don't know how it's going to be done, but I will be reaching out to them to find out. And then I know I'm saying a lot, but I'm thinking about the time, right? You had already mentioned when we had the National Black Political Convention in Gary, and you came and you were able to.
Hold that thought for one moment, Dr. Frey. You hold that thought. We had ball. You hear me?
Didn't we?
Oh, my gosh. And see, the thing is, It was as soon as we met, as soon as Senator Owens
yes.
and I met, it was
yes.
on
yes.
and it was rocking.
It
know?
Was,
and
it
so
was, it was.
Oh, my gosh. That's the spirit.
Wasn't that something?
It was wonderful. And see, that's
it was
the
absolutely
way
wonderful.
Black folks are really used to functioning, or how, you know, we know and have seen our people functioning. It was like I knew him, you know, for our
absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That one
that's
time.
The way it, absolutely. That you're absolutely right, sis. That's exactly the way it was, and that's the way he was. I mean, and
right.
he was bad. That's all I can say. And I think about even his testimony he would share. I mean, even when he was younger, and he had served some time in prison, I believe he had said, and I don't want to misquote him, but, you know,
right, right.
because this white man tried to do something to his wife, and he had to do something to this white man. And
all
so,
right,
you know, he, yes, I'm telling you, he didn't play. I mean, this
that's
brother
right.
did not play, and he spoke
oh,
what he had to eat, what they always say, speaking truth to power. And I would
that's
to God
right.
that there were others like him. I'm going to tell you, because when you see and you sit up here and look at all of this other stuff that we got on, you can count probably on one hand the fire that's still present among the, unfortunately, our people in these legislative positions that, you know, don't really support. They go along, they get along, and they're compromising and all that. Senator mm-hmm. Owens was not like that. He was
that's
a fiery
right.
person, and he held true to his people, and he maintained it even to his passing. So I'm telling you, I think that this mm-hmm. is a wonderful thing that you're doing this as a tribute to him, because he was a remarkable man, and to know him, as they would say, to know him is to love him. And that's just the way
yes.
it was with him.
Yeah. And
yes,
tell
ma'am.
Because, again, from the very moment, because, you know, I was spitting some fire, and as soon as I did, he
yeah,
was
that's
spitting
what I'm
some
saying.
Fire.
I know. I, hey, come on now. And you know what? I know he loved you, because the bottom line
yeah.
is any of his
yeah.
people that was doing what was righteous to help the people, he loved.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yes.
all it was.
Yes.
And one thing about him, he was a brother that would call you out. He will call your
yep.
tail out if you're not doing your work. And then also if for this lad, I want to say a couple of years ago, he and I were talking, and he, as far as being the granddaddy for the reparations, you know,
mm-hmm.
on that end
mm-hmm.
is that he did a presentation in Scotland, okay, presenting to them about blacks and reparations and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have that in the actual Black Agenda
okay.
book, but he took
okay.
it to Scotland. Okay, I mean,
oh,
I mean, he
see,
like
I didn't
me.
Know that. I
yes,
did not
ma'am.
Know that.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
Why I'm saying
yes,
we
got
to share that information, because I didn't realize that he was the first to take that through to try to get the reparations bill through the
yes,
House
yes.
there in Massachusetts. I didn't, you know.
Isn't that
it
something?
Just shows you.
Isn't that something?
It just shows you. And oh, Dr. Frazier, listen, it's funny. It's not funny, but interesting that you said what you said. Do you know I called him a couple of days ago, and again, you know, got the message that the phone was off or whatever, right?
Right, right,
and
right.
And you know,
right.
the next day, it was the next day that I learned that he had just passed. Because
oh,
I,
wow.
you know, I would call him periodically. Yep, I would call him periodically just so that we could just chat
oh,
for a while.
Wow.
And I knew he was ill. But, you know, we, you
yes,
know,
yes.
every now and then we still would just talk and just laugh and, you know, whatever. And I had just called him like a day before
wow.
that he passed, right? To just show you how
oh,
in tune,
wow.
you know. And then the last thing I want to say is, and this is for folks to also realize, because it has happened with several of our elders, it was reported that he supposedly contract
come
COVID.
On now.
Mm. Right?
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm just saying, we need to really pay closer attention to some things.
We
really
certainly
do.
We certainly do. We certainly do. You know, we have to protect our elders. We have to protect our children, because they, you know, I mean, I know this is not the topic for discussion, but, you know, they pushing this thing. I mean, they pushing
that's
it
right.
and pushing it and pushing
that's
it,
right.
you know, down to the children and the little children and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, wait a minute here, you know. But
right.
I tell you, sis, but Senator Owens, I mean, he was, I'm telling you, he was really a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, like I said, well, he did his presentation in Scotland. He traveled to Africa, you know, trying to, you know, to do this reparations work and everything like that. And as a matter of fact, you know, he also, you know, as far as in Cobra here, with Brother Cam Howard, you know, he, Brother Cam had reached out to me, you know, and just wanted to connect with Senator Owens about this reparations. And, of course, they had the opportunity to connect and then, of course, input out about the passing, the transitioning of Senator Owens. So Senator Owens truly is one person who's going to be great. He leaves a great void, and I don't know who is going to be able to step in his shoes to do that work, because a lot of times, like I said, you don't really have individuals that got that kind of heart, you know, like the, what they call the ride or die folks. You know,
that's
he was one of the ride or die folks, okay? You know, so I'm just saying.
Absolutely. Well, we will really do a tribute to him because, you know, we're doing our first major summit in September. It's our Reparatory Week. Oh, yeah. That's what I was trying to tell you earlier. The We Charge Genocide 21 Project will hold its first national Reparatory Justice Summit the weekend of Labor Day. And, of course, you know, we got to see what happens with COVID, but that's the projection.
Of course,
in Washington, D.C., in Washington, D.C., Labor Day weekend, September 1st through the 4th, we'll be doing our Reparatory Justice Summit. And now here's the twist. Here's the new thing.
What's the twist?
We've heard people talk about this, what I'm getting ready to say. We've heard people talk about it, but we've never seen it actually put in place where we're doing it. And that is our first national pre-plebiscite convention. So now, see, we learn from those who came before us. I was fortunate enough to hear the teachings of a great Baba and Mama by the name of Baba, Herman Ferguson and Alua Ferguson. They taught us, and Dr. Imari Obadeli, Queen Mother Moore, they taught us about plebiscites, looking and holding a plebiscite. Because we never had one, you see. And what
that's
a plebiscite begins, it enables us to begin a process. And again, this is a pre-plebiscite so that people can get familiar and acclimated with the concept. But we will now be able to sit and vote. Those of us who are inclined to, we will vote on some things as at least some prerequisites. For example, what do we want to be called? Have we ever determined that?
They haven't figured it out yet.
Right. So we need to come to a consensus, at least to do some business with others that they know here is this group who's representing self-determination, you know, and at least for, you know, whatever period of time, we agree and vote as such that this is what we're going to be called for now. This is the way we wish to be governed for now. This is where we like to look at living for now. You see, we've never come to concrete conclusions or decisions about those things, at least in a first phase kind of focus. And I'm saying, of course, there are certain smaller groups that have done that. I mean, the Nation has done it, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know of Prince Asiel and his group with the Hebrews.
So
it's not like it hasn't been done, but it's primarily been done under religion. And that's not, we see, that's the difference. We want ours to be under self-determination. And in that way, whatever religion you are, it doesn't matter because our focus is self-determination.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think that that's a wonderful thing. You know, of course, like I said, I always try to figure out, how do you think about all this stuff? You know, I tell you, when I look at the other things that you have upstairs, what is this? You know, I see the We Charge Genocide. You got all of this set up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man. You know, I mean, it's like, how do you think about, and I mean, in the constant thought pattern that you have going forth, I'm like, how does she think about all this, you know, but that's just how you are. I'm serious, because you, go ahead.
And the answer to that kind of simply, I mean, well, no, it's not a simple answer, but I could say this. Having at least had the opportunity to be around a few people, be it a short period of time, a long period of time, I'm a quick learner. And so I got the opportunity to sit and only for a few hours with Baba Kwame Ture before he became an ancestor. I did what we know to be as tradition. When you're doing certain things, you're supposed to sit with an elder and run that by them,
yes,
and you know,
yes,
and get their,
yes,
opinion and get their views. Well, I was able to do,
yes,
that with them, right? And he,
absolutely,
said to me, without any uncertain terms, he said, do what you do and do it the way you do it. He said, I like it, do it. You know, and so, you know, and we had other conversations, but my point is that, you know, there's some folks who really encouraged me and helped me to grow and develop, and some of the things that they said was things like this: we must not fail our ancestors.
See,
I internalized those teachings, some of those things.
Okay.
And so, and even when you listen to Brother Malcolm or listen to Queen Mother Moore or listen to Dr. Angus Wilson, some of us are not just listening because, you know, it sounds good. These are teachers for us.
Yes.
You see?
Absolutely.
So that's how I'm able to do what I do, because they did it. They taught it. They helped us to comprehend it. And now we have the responsibility to make certain that we continue to work.
I love that. I love that. What you're saying, and I mean, what you're sharing, you may not realize, but you're really imparting, doing an impartation to those who may be under the sound of your voice at this particular time. Because when you said that learning from the elders, you know,
and
society now wants to cut off the voices of the elders and, you know, just put it all on the youth and everything like that. And it's like, hey, hold back. You just imparted some phenomenal wisdom to anybody who would be able to receive that, you know, but you got to get it from the elders. You got to get it from the elders.
Certain
things, I appreciate you saying that. I really appreciate that. And that's
and
how you learn.
You know. And you know this because as a, you know, particularly as a black woman, there's certain things, and brothers too, needless to say, but there are traditions and customs and things that are indigenous to us, you see.
And these
things are not taught, but they are there. And so, again, it's a part of our culture, a part, again, of our history, our folkway mores, and there's certain things. Now, again, as black women, we have really kind of lost some of that. It used to be certain things that grandmom and great-grandmom and so forth that you learned in the kitchen and da-da-da-da-da, right?
Yes.
And unfortunately, some of that has just been broken. So we now are making certain, to the best of our ability, that we can revive. As a matter of fact, the Million Women March's theme for this year, for our 25-year anniversary, is resurrection.
Wow, that's good.
That's right.
Good.
It's resurrection. Yeah.
Wow.
See?
That's really good. That's really good. That is really, really good. That's really good, because we do have to be restored and revamped and a whole bunch of things. Rebuilt, because we have really, in a lot of cases, have lost our way. And so the things that you're sharing and everything, I really feel is phenomenal. And then, of course, you know, thinking about our young women and young men, I mean, in particular, it's like, wow, you know, they're out here with no leadership or very little leadership and guidance.
That's right.
And it's kind of like, you know, the blind leading the blind. I'm telling you. So, you know, I mean, I really appreciate you sharing this information because it's critical. We have to know what's going on. And that's one thing I have credit is that you definitely, you know, have been putting this out here and letting people know what's going on. You're definitely letting them know, hey, the house is on fire kind of thing. What we're going to do kind of thing. You know, you kind of like put it in everybody's face so that they'll know, like, look, no, you can't sit down. It's still work to do.
Absolutely.
So
I really appreciate you, especially now.
I said I appreciate what you've been doing, you know, because you have been, and I mean, I just have to say this because it's the truth, you know, and you know, I'm just thinking, I'm quoting the scripture that says to give honor to whom honor is due. And I do know from the years that I've known you, you've always been pushing and singing the same song, haven't changed as far as the message. You've been singing the same song, and that consistency has made a difference, because when people think about Dr. Philae, Sister Empress Chi, you know, that's what they think about, Million Woman March. We charge genocide. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, how you have your own branding. It's like, okay, when you think like that, you say Million Woman March, and then you say we charge genocide, and it's been consistent.
Yes.
It's been consistent. So
absolutely.
I just want to say, sister, keep on doing what you're doing. We do support you here. Like I said, we don't get a chance to connect as much as we would like, because, you know, it's fires on every front. But believe me, we are truly appreciative of the work that you have been doing and continue to do. I really am very grateful.
Ashe, my sister. But listen, before you go, please share, you know, information about the National Black Agenda Consortium, where folks can go to look at it, to get more information. And even before you do that, just share a little bit of tidbit about the actual, because family, we're talking about an actual report, all right, that you can look at, examine, and see the whole thing is we have to now look at how we're going to do certain things. We talk about the problems. You put them today. Well, this is happening. That's happening. But yet, where is the practical applications? So your family, I'm going to have Dr. Fraser share with us a little more about the National Black Agenda. And again, these are things we can look at. They're always open for further development, you know, from all of us. But here's at least a framework. Here's something tangible. And by the way, Dr. Fraser, I certainly made sure that the group that's putting together the National Political Convention Anniversary, that's going to be happening now. It's going to be August. We had a session, and they were asking, does anybody know of any kinds of codes of conduct or any other kind of group or papers we can look at to present or whatever? I made sure they know, and I gave them the link and all of that. So you should
we
be hearing from somebody soon.
Well, you know what? Thank you so much, and I'm glad for this platform to just speak briefly about the National Black Agenda. As you indicated, for the National Black Agenda, there is an actual book, and the way it was crafted, several subject matter experts and community individuals, grassroots folks, we came together and we met at the local organizing committee, with the local organizing committee housed at the Nation of Islam. That's where we did primarily our work, but the thing is that we have individuals who, like I said, are considered scholars, you know, like Dr. Ivor Carruthers, Dr. Mm-hmm. Robert Starks. We have individuals who are grassroots, you know, Brother Reason Fellows, and a whole bunch of other individuals who have come together to do this work. And so what transpired is that we have like about 16 or 17 components in the National Black Agenda that outlines what the situation is, and then also it tells what policies need to be passed, what the individuals can do, what the community can do. And so it is a solutions-based approach. In addition, in our public policy and safety component, we have in there a piece that was written by this brother who has his organization. I can't think of the name right now, but Brother Randy Ryder, who wrote the excellent piece on pathways to citizenship, where he has He detailed how individuals who have been incarcerated, been in prison, what needs to transpire to make them whole again. And so he's been trying to get this pushed through and everything through legislative practices and stuff like that so that people can be accountable. It's an accountability component in there. But it's like once you've met all of those things, then you are free. Get the X off my back kind of thing. And so, of course, we have in there the reparations piece, you know, with Brother Cam Howard as the president, the male president, and, of course, Senator Owens' piece in there. We have education. We have the faith-based component, the women's component, which, of course, like I said, you're going to be contributing to that. And so there are various components in there that address specifically our issues. And one of the things that people, you know, say, they say, well, okay, it was done in Chicago. But the reality is that our issues, whatever the issues are, they're the same. Yeah, it may be a different locale, but it's the same issue. You know, reparations, we still need reparations. I mean, that hasn't changed. We also have in there about our collaboration in Africa, how we have to be connected with the continent. You know, I mean, we are all one body. And then also I wanted to just share with you is that we're getting ready to do, and we're in the workings of trying to do a long-term strategic plan. When we have that, when we make preparations for that meeting, I'm going to get in contact with you because I want you to be one of the ones sitting on the panel too. It'll be via Zoom right now,
mm-hmm,
as things
mm-hmm.
are being worked sure. out. But, you know, the mm-hmm. long-term strategic plan, because this is what we have to do. We're taking the document because we have a component there about economics and all of that. But we're taking the document and other people are breathing additional things in there to how we can get a long-term strategic
yes.
plan out of here. And like I said, certainly want you to be a part of it. But I want to make it clear, there is a document. And as you said, this is the website for it. It's just called NBAC Chicago,
mm-hmm.
NBACChicago.org. And all a person mm-hmm. has to do is put that in there. They will see the document, and then they'll also have the opportunity, if they wanted to purchase it as a book, they can
mm-hmm.
do it in a paperback form or a hardback form. But then we also have the printable form where a person can just
yes.
print out the section that they want. And one
yes.
of the benefits of this thing is that it's an evolving document. We don't sit up there and say this belongs to us. It's the people's
right.
document. So if
that's
you print
right.
out a component in there, then you say, okay, we can use some of this, and we're going to add something else to it, you know, for whatever else that person or group is doing. So, you know, we're here. And one of the things that I'm going to say is that all of the work that we have been doing has been a labor of love because we don't receive funding, you know, from
that's
like how
right.
a lot of these
there
organizations, you know, they get funding.
You
know what I'm talking about. They get it from
that's
the
right.
government. Now, believe me, we want funding. Don't make it, I
right,
mean, I don't
right,
want to
sure.
give the impression like, you know,
sure,
like, oh, hey,
sure.
you know, like patting ourselves on the back saying we don't get any. No, we want funding. But the reality is that we have to be willing to commit to do this work even
that's
if
right.
you don't get funding. That's just like how the work that you're doing, you know, I mean,
that's
just
right.
like you do the work. Even if you don't get the funding, you're going to do what you can because you got to help
that's,
your people.
That's right.
a part of your destiny. That's a part of your purpose. That's what you have been ordained to do. And so we're going to continue
mm-hmm.
to do the work if you don't get a dime from anybody. But the point is that there is a document, inbackchicago.org. We want to encourage people to pull it down, to look at it, and use it. You know, use it for your benefit, however you can benefit. I mean, you know, even craft, you know, different things that you might want to do in your community or, you know, or whatever. We have to make use of what we have. And so that's where we are right now. So that's pretty much, you know, the gist of it. I hope I covered as much as I could. You know,
yes,
but I
you
truly
did.
Appreciate this opportunity. You
yes,
know, I love you, my sister.
You.
I love you, and I appreciate
thank
you.
You.
So I want you to make sure you give yourself a strong hug. And then, of course, make sure you're taking care of yourself, which I know that you are. You know,
no
just continue to take care of yourself. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate you allowing me to come on and sharing this.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we are here anytime. If there's some new information or whatever that comes up, you know we are here. Family, before we let Dr. Frazier go, I just want to make sure that if anyone has a question or a comment that they'd like to bring to her while we still have her, you can press one now. And she will definitely be joining us in the very near future again because Women's History Month is coming.
Yay.
And so we're going to be really, yep, for March. Y'all get ready, sisters, because we're getting ready to really bust it up. And again, Dr. Frazier, we plan to do a special session in September that will focus specifically
okay.
on examining what we have with the National Black Agenda. And so there will
yes,
be a
please.
Whole session that folks can look at it and, you know, talk about it, exchange
absolutely.
Views, et cetera, because that's what we have to do. That's what we have to do. Okay?
We have to do that.
All right.
So thank
yep.
you so much.
No
love
doubt.
And peace. You know I do. And you have a wonderful evening, okay?
Thank you, my sister, and you as
okay.
well.
Be
talk
blessed
to
now.
You soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay,
peace
bye-bye.
You. All right, family. So, again, that was Dr. Gail Frazier. And, of course, as you just heard, she is one of the key people. I'm not sure if it's chairperson. I think it is chairperson of that particular project. They shift chair people every other year or so. But at any rate, I got the opportunity to meet them,
maybe. I guess it's been like, it's been like 8 years or so now. But that's part of our Chicago team. And so, you know, over the years, we've developed relationships and other kinds of extended family mechanisms with brothers and sisters in Chicago, Detroit, Baltimore, and so forth and so on. Because, you know, it was always our intention to build a movement. And so it has been very difficult to do it, but we've done it and are doing it. And so this year, again, marks that 25-year anniversary time period. And man, oh, man, when y'all see what we got in store, you're going to really have a much better understanding about what MWM is really about. Okay, I'm checking to see where Sister Tawanda is, family, so y'all just give me a moment here because sometimes there's a phone communication problem. But let me see if I can reach her just in case something has gone awry with the technology. But right now, let me just ask a question for all of you, and that is, what do we need to do to now bring about real Black political power? As we get ready to commemorate the 50-year anniversary, what do we actually need to do to bring about Black political power? So if you have a thought, a comment, suggestion, or something that you're actually doing, please press 1 now. Share that with us. We would certainly love to hear that because we need to look at different things to help us literally do these things. We can't have people still just talking about, well, we need to come together. Duh. Okay. How? You know, what's the plan here? What do you think you need to do, actually need to do to make these things happen? Okay, so if someone has a suggestion or you're doing something, by all means, please share that with us because that is what it now requires, that we now bring about strategic modes of operations that literally is going to have us, move forward with some form of victory. And of course, sustainability. Again, to be able to sustain what we build. I've learned that, that's more than a notion. And so to be able to do that has to be a part of, the whole overall thing of what we have to do. Okay, so doesn't look like anybody has anything they want to share with us. Again, if you do, you can press 1 now. And certainly not just in regards to the question I'm asking, but if you have some information or some other things that you'd like to share, again, we are open at this point for you to do so, but you need to press 1 so I can see that you want to share something. Okay, cool. We got somebody here. And so the caller at 8521, thank you for your call, and your mic is now open. Greetings to you.
Peace and love to you, President.
General. Hey, Sister Namira, how you been?
One of my favorite strategists.
warrior
queen woman. Yes,
look,
yes.
But we released this Black Crip. Oh my gosh! Wait till you see what's getting ready to come with the Black Crip. We've been sharing it a little bit within some of our internal structures. So, it's coming. But go ahead, sister. Go ahead. Share with us what you want to share.
Yes, indeed. What our sister, powerful, another powerful presentation. I came in on, a little late, but I caught, some of the presentation. And as always, powerful presentations. And yes, indeed, we definitely need to give honor what is due. And my President General, I honor you to the fullest. And I just want to say to the presenter, as she was talking, I was doing research. The information that I did, caught the tail end of powerful. And give thanks for building this so needed black custodian that we need, you know, we definitely need it. And, of course, you already know what we need to do is we got to just do it, you know.
That's right.
Plan and execute. And
that's
also
right.
protect ours. While we build, and we definitely have to make sure we build and protect our own by any means necessary.
Absolutely.
So I just want to say, you know, always going to give honor and thanks to you for helping me, you know, inspiring me, you know, educating me and, you know, still keeping me on my toes and focus and, you know, keeping me steadfast in my endeavor since returning home. Next month will be 25 years.
Wow.
Out of incarceration. It's been a struggle out here. We've been having the same Negro stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, same struggles. But I am just giving honor and thanks for making it almost 25 years, February 25th. Of being out of incarceration and, you know, had a couple of, you know, stumbling blocks, but I give thanks and honor that I'm still moving onward, as you say, onward forever, backwards never.
That's right. Absolutely.
You know, with doing what I got to do to stay afloat, you know, building from ground up. You know, with out of my own pockets, yes, we do. As our sister before said, we do want the funding.
That's
and it's
right.
ours. It's really
right.
ours money. You know,
it is, but the problem has been, and because I've heard other people say that, well, they owe us, they do. But if you don't design getting it the way you want to get it,
exactly,
as opposed to
exactly.
See, that's the thing. See,
well,
that's
the
got
point
so
I was going to be making.
Yep.
Yes,
indeed.
So
it's got
to
be the way we decide to get it.
Right. And like you said with the reparation piece, you know, we'll take it all. We'll take free tuition.
Yep.
Yep. We'll take, you know, giving us, you
that's
know,
right.
debt free so
that's
we can
right.
build from that. Because once we
that's
clear
right.
our debt, you know, and get those 800 scores, you know, like, you know, these other folks, they've been allowing to get, you know, and clear their debt. You know, we can be able to get homes, houses, land, and all that other type of stuff. So every form
that's
of reparation
right. right.
and repairing our nation, we'll take it
that's
all.
That's right.
And we demand it all. So
that's right.
It's just so much
see,
I can
in reality,
say, but...
though, in reality, sis, I'll tell you what our position really is, and that is all that stuff about, you know, our credit score and all of that, we're not even going to play that game with them like that, you see.
Well, it's some madness with that as well, because first
that's,
of all,
that is a trap. That's a trap.
Right.
Absolutely.
That is a
trap.
And
so we're not even going to try to do that like that. With reparatory justice, like I always give people the example, and it usually helps give clarity. If you're hit by a car or if someone hits your car and causes a death, or a serious injury as a result of someone hitting you and you're nowhere at fault, or you're walking on the sidewalk and somebody got their car and they come up and for whatever reason it comes up on the sidewalk and crashes you through a window. My point is that entity must deal with compensation. See, that's
exactly.
why it's important for that's why we connect our work with Mother Cali House. It's not just, that's the popular term, and that's what we're going to be using, and that's why we also say reparatory justice. But we make sure that we also connect what she taught us, which is ex-slave compensation. because exactly. for the work that, see, we have to connect those black dots. And that key word, for most people don't comprehend that key word, compensation. When you are injured, you got to do. That's right. So that's why we're able to make our position a lot clearer than some, I believe, because we're connecting things in such a way that you can't wiggle out of it. You see, because we're not just saying you owe us. We're saying that you have a debt, meaning them, because
right.
there is injuries here. There's injuries as well.
Right.
See,
exactly.
And there it is. And there's no way that you can, in nobody's law, of any type of, you know, real kind of, you know, so-called substance in a certain manner, you can't harm somebody and, you know, be it intentionally or not.
Thinking
but
you can get away
intentionally
with it.
And get away, that's right. And you not have
right.
to pay in some kind of way. See, that's
exactly.
the position. That's the position. And that's why we have four areas. Our formula is aura, the letter 4, and the letter J. You know, and I was telling my brother earlier, Brother Lee, I said, Brother Lee, you know, people don't know that I study physics as quiet as it's kept. And I do that for a reason, because as we structure certain things, I like to link it to certain things that have a certain kind of oomph to it, certain kind of dynamic. So I utilize formulas. You'll see that in a lot of our work. So for the reparatory justice piece, it's the letter R, the number 4, and the letter J. And that's because there's four areas that we're focusing on. Each one of those areas have a specific application. So like one, reparations, applicable to the government. Area number 2, restitution. That's applicable to the corporations and institutions right. that were involved in the transatlantic slave trade, et cetera. The area number 3, retribution. Each one of these areas are actual areas in law. Reparatory justice, reparations is an area in law. Restitution is an area in law. Retribution is an area in law. And the last one is restoration. Which most only use when it comes to the courts. But restorative law is beyond just what they show you, which is if you have, say, for example, somebody so-called committed a crime and then they confront the person and that is the restorative justice as pertains to the court system. You see? That's not what we're talking about.
But how about when it pertains to us?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's another area and level of restorative justice that's applicable, that's connected to reparations, restitution, and retribution law. But most don't present that. They don't present that last component. We do. We have. It's a part of our structure.
It's been 25 years that you made the call. And as our queen sister said earlier, give you your due honor. Like I said, 25 years that it's our anniversary of knowing you. When you made the call.
I assembled,
I was one in 3 million.
I know that's
not. That's how they say, whatever millions they say, 100,000 they say. But I was there present when you made the call. And it's actually an anniversary of knowing you, heeding to your call. And yes, indeed, our queen said earlier, I give you honor and all the love and admiration.
I certainly appreciate that, sis, but I tell you, that was phase one. Unfortunately, it took 25 years to complete phase one. I had no idea
but
that was phase one.
Yeah, I'm still, growing strong with you.
I know that's right.
But now we approach. See, a lot of people don't know that Million Woman March had a theme, had been and does have now a theme, and it was the three R's. And the three R's was and is repentance, resurrection, and restoration. That was the actual theme for the Million Woman March in 1997. If you look at the poster, you'll see that at the bottom of the poster. Ain't somebody just made up. I said that in 1997. That was our theme. The
you know, I
was
know.
The Day of the Talk.
No,
yeah.
I know.
So,
I forgot every document, you know. I'm a coordinator, so you know I know.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
so my
key to
is,
the third power. You know,
there you go.
Off to the fourth power. You know, I know. I can go to the P to the R to the what?
Oh, so, there it is. And that's why
you know,
That's why it's so funny, you know. Sister Manera, that people fail to see. You know, that was so much more to it than just, you know, an event or some hype or some stuff. You know, and the last thing on that is I still find it amazing for whatever reason that sometimes when I talk with people, they for whatever reason find it very hard to say Million Woman March. Well, I talked to a brother earlier today who you're going to be hearing from soon because we're building, you know, constantly. But I just met him today, and he said, oh, yeah, you're involved with the Million Women's March. And I said, no.
Make them
correct. I said, right, why do people always want to put an apostrophe S or an E in our name? Why is that? Because I hear it and find it so often. And I know the reason. But you rarely hear anyone ever say the Million Men's or the Million Man's March. Okay? Everyone always says the Million Man March. They don't say no men's and man's and all that stuff. But with us,
right,
they try to switch it up and say whatever they feel like they want to say. And it's the Million Woman, more just like the Million Man. Now, we have components that have an E or an S, the Black Women's Defense League and Justice League, or, you know, we have those components. But the original and historic Million Woman March is just like the Million Man March.
Original,
and so,
never duplicated.
Right. I just find it so interesting that folks just want to say whatever they want to say and not give the historical significance, you know, as it really is. But it's all good. We understand that, you know, when it comes to our sisters, when it comes to our women, folks think that they can do whatever they want to do with us, and so they have. But they're getting ready to get a crude awakening. And here's a big surprise, Sister Manera. I didn't share it. Only a few people know of this, but I'll share it with you tonight and a few of our family members that are tuning in. And it's this. And others know, we are preparing to launch, to a greater extent, our campaign to fight violence and abuse of our women and girls. And as you, of course, know, Sister Manera, we've been working on this for several years now with very little response and support, even though we put the call out to Black men and others, right? Well, let me tell you, you know, the creator, the ancestors, whichever you prefer, sometimes they look, you know, y'all done did this work, so we're going to give you something now to really work with. And so this is what has happened. So very soon, I will make an announcement about something that is going to deal with what we've been fighting to happen in regards to this issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. Remember, January, the system declared this national, because some of them say national slavery and trafficking awareness or prevention month, and some just say national human trafficking prevention month. But my point is there's very little in our communities that talks or addresses any of that. Kidnapping,
sex trafficking and things of that nature, which is going on in all of our communities all over the country. So my point is, you know, we're going to make an announcement very soon that's going to connect the dots for our National Day of Awareness and Action, which is going to happen May the 7th in various cities. Folks, sisters and brothers are going to be asked to do something on that day that focuses on the litany, the various types of violations of our women and girls. And when I make the announcement that's connected to that, it's going to motivate people to get more involved. Because for whatever reason, people often don't want to do things because it's the right thing to do. They do stuff because it's connected to some other stuff. So we figured that out. So very soon, you're going to hear something. Our family's going to hear something very interesting and I dare say groundbreaking. So we're going to get what we need when it comes to dealing with this issue of rape, molestation, beatings, et cetera, when it comes to our women and girls. Going to be very interesting, you know, and we worked years to bring that together. Well, it's getting ready to happen this year as a part of our 25-year anniversary. So listen, let me go back to our Nines family again. If you want to join in the conversation, we got Sister Maneer joining in with us from Newark. And by the way, y'all, we mentioned earlier that the commemoration for the 50-year anniversary of the National Black Political Convention is going to happen in Newark. So we are planning, meaning MWM, we are planning to do a side session because a lot of times, you know, when you have a convention or a conference or whatever, people oftentimes do parallel sessions. Well, MWM will be doing a Recharge Genocide 21 parallel session during August when they do the National Political Convention. And also, family, want to remind everyone and encourage sisters in particular, in March we will be doing our first National Million Black Women Rising Federation conference. It's dealing with black women political power and leadership. It'll be happening from starts the week of March 28th, but the 28th, the 29th, and the 30th is free. It's 3 days on Zoom. We'll be dealing with different presentations, information, workshops, and all of that for 3 days, starting on Monday, the 28th, then the 29th, and the 30th. However, on the 31st through April 3rd, it will be for members only. Members only. And best believe the information that you're going to get is going to be very important and very powerful. So again, if you want more information, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. We'll be telling folks more about our Harriet Tubman Bicentennial Jubilee. It'll be taking place for the whole year. So we've connected that to our anniversary, our commemoration, and some other things. Lastly, and again, family, if you want to join in the conversation, you can press 1 now, or if you have some information you want to share. Lastly, we will be making an announcement soon about some of the meetings that we will be having with some of the black mayors, because, again, when it comes to the issue of violence and abuse, black mayors have to now set up some task forces to address that issue in their city. And those that do not comply, we are going to report it come October when we do our anniversary. We want the people to know that we met with Mayor so-and-so, or councilperson so-and-so, and as such have requested that a task force be put together to begin to examine the issue of rape, murder, et cetera, in their city as it pertains to our women and girls. And we will report on that October as to who has complied and who has not. Okay, that's how we're moving. Right.
So, and then deal with some internal stuff going on with women in this administration.
Well, you know, I know, but again, the way we've designed this, we're not going to let people, you know, get away with
whatever. Right. I mean, there's some basic fundamentals here that have to be looked at, and we have enough documentation and information. By the way, and caller, you are at, oops, let me get my glasses. You're at 2274. Caller, I'm coming to you in 1 minute. But remember, we've done an extremely amount of research. Here's my example. There's a couple of colleges, but also the UN, have made it very clear that the violence and abuse of women, now they say of women, so you know that there's a component there just for us. They're not going to focus on that. We will. But one of the universities in Chicago, California, UN, and others, they have come to the conclusion that during the pandemic, that women, the likeliness of women to be violated, abused during these past 2 years, the increase of that is off the hook. So they have literally coined these past 2 years when it comes to women, the silent pandemic, or the I forget the exact terminology, but the silent something, as it pertains to the amount of abuse and violence that have been occurring with women all over the country. But there's not all over the world, but there's a specific report that focuses on the U.S. Now, this is new stuff. Now, if black women do not step up and deal with the component that is relevant and applicable to us, then we off of our game and off of the board and have other people doing stuff on our behalf. But we ain't having that. So, again, we have information, research, et cetera, and kudos to Sister Keisha. She's probably tuning in. Again, we have people who are doing excellent research and providing excellent information that most of our people are not getting privy to. And that's a part of our job to make sure on the grassroots level that some of that information that's in these other circles is placed in the midst of our people, easily, readily accessible. You see, so again, how does those reports apply to black women? Meaning they have done a research study, et cetera, that specifically says women, past years, with this COVID thing, the increase of beatings, of all kinds of violent abuse, et cetera, has risen in an alarming kind of way. See? So now black women, we got to have that conversation so that we can raise our voice and have our input in these types of things. So stay right there, Sister Manir. Caller, you are at 2274. 2274, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Hi. Hello, can you hear me?
Hey, Brother Adrian, how you be?
Okay. Yeah, I'm better than great. I'm happy to be Tuesday. I'll be 48 on God's planet. But in addition to that, I'm very happy to still be around to be able to help do this important work because, you know, this is some important work, not just the saying what the issue is, but also being involved with the issue that as black men, our primary responsibility, not our job, but our primary responsibility is to help with stopping the abuse of women and girls. And first of all and foremost, and I'm making a call to black men to stop being participants in abuse to black women and girls because we have to protect them and to be able to try to further our communities and better our families and better our communities in general. And I'm glad you put out the call about black mayors because we have a black mayor here in the city of Baton Rouge, Ms. Sharon Weston Broome. So we have to try to get that call out because I got on the front page of the Advocate today, which is the local newspaper here in Baton Rouge, that on the front page, and I'm looking at the article now where it says Governor Edwards knew of Green's death in 2019. And it said a text notified the governor of violent Memphis struggle, but he kept quiet for 2 years. So as we talk about this issue of the abuse of black women and girls, we got to make the calls to our elected officials as well as some of these things that are not only going on in Louisiana but being covered up. And we have to pull the cover off these things.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, Brother Adrian, because, you know, again, I hadn't looked at, you know, the one for Baton Rouge. You know, we're assessing all of the cities to see where they are. In fact, there's a whole national council of black mayors, and we're going to go through all of that. And I didn't get a chance to look at Baton Rouge yet, so thank you very much. And again, with technology, we can do these meetings virtually. And so there's no excuse now where these meetings cannot happen, you see. And so if you would be so kind to, you know, let's talk later this week so that we can start coordinating that, because our Brothers in Support group, Biz Group, is now going to be a very active cadre. They assisted us previously for other campaigns, but this time they're going to literally have an outline of things that is connected to the Black Print Agenda 25. So this is not just going to be, you know, the brothers helping us for the reunion. This is going to be brothers stepping up to do things now for the next 3 years, between now and the end of 2025. And one of those things is going to be for brothers to work with the sisters who are in our movement to work with their sons or grandsons or nephews or husbands, you see. This is how we're connecting some of these things as well. I mean, and definitely supporting, you know, us as women, but we realize we've got to now do this thing in an even more holistic manner, that we have young males, our sisters and grandmothers and so forth, we got young males with us as women, and we got to make sure that these young brothers have the kind of capability to interact with real black men. So our Brothers in Support group is now going to be even more involved, because, again, we have women who have young black males in their circle, in their family, in their community, and also men, husband, brothers, sons, who are incarcerated or formerly incarcerated. And this stuff is not being addressed. We're leaving it to the system to have so-called halfway houses or whatever you want to call it. There's little community connectivity to the returning citizens, so-called returning citizens, you see. We haven't taken on that kind of real responsibility. And most of the things that are in the community are connected to the system. We don't have our own.
Yeah.
See, that's what we're going to be doing in these next couple of years. That these brothers and sisters come to us.
Exactly.
That we have established in our community what we need, and that goes back to reparatory justice. See, that's why it's different. See, most of these folks are just got a grant or whatever, you know, whatever way they're doing it. We're talking about we have to be restored, and so, based on reparatory justice for us as a people connected to the first phase of reparations, this is what we need for now. So there's a short-term goal and there's a long-term goal. With all these vacant properties in these various communities, we need to get these properties and utilize these properties for independent institutions. So that's going to be the type of platform. Yeah, that's the type of platform that we're going to be bringing. And note, again, they got to give us these monies, not because of a grant, not because of corporate sponsoring.
No, but they're our tax dollars.
No, not even that. See, that's why it's different. We're different. It's not even that. We're talking about reparatory justice. See, reparatory justice is based on the fact that two things. One, 250 years or so of free labor. See, you can't, we cannot approach our position in the way that somebody else would. So anybody can say that they got tax dollars involved. Anyone can say that. Only we can say that you went and kidnapped us and brought us here. Only we can say that. So our approach and situation to this and remedy to this is based on our ancestors, not some taxes that we paid. Our lives and our blood, sweat, and tears have been paid. That's a totally different position. And that's the position that, that our ancestors, at least far as from what I see, is what we have to say and do based on their lives, based on their the murders of them, the rapes of them, et cetera. You see? And along with what you just said, Brother Adrian, don't get me wrong, along with that too, but I'm saying we have to get justice and honor our ancestors. These other people do. Do you know that yesterday was, I think it was yesterday, one of them days this week, it was National Holocaust Day.
Yeah, I did hear about that. And
yeah.
And you know, and with the movie that I saw the trailer of, American Skin, which is directed by Spike Lee.
Oh, yeah.
When the guy mentioned that slavery was in the past, a Latino police officer said that slavery was in the past, and even though it was a movie, but there are people who feel like that for real.
That's right.
And then the
That's
brother
right.
from prison said, how come you never say the Jewish people in the, about
right.
the Holocaust being in the past, and everything got silent. Nobody mentioned
That's right.
that. And
That's
I
right.
don't care what anybody say, because when I was in trade school, speaking of the Holocaust, when I was in trade school, they had a Jewish professor who had a problem with some of the things that was in my email, saying black business this and black woman sassy and black this and black that. And I said, that was my email. She had an issue with that. I said, well, ma'am, do you have a Jewish last name? Because she brought up the Holocaust. I said, well, do you have a Jewish last name? She said, yes, I do. I said, well, see, I don't have an African last name. I have a European last name. The fact that I don't even have my own last name says that we were so that we went through more than what people in the Holocaust went through. And then the whole room got quiet. So we have to address our issues. And keep in mind, the Holocaust didn't happen in America. The Holocaust happened in Germany. So how did Jewish people get reparations or some form of reparations from America for something that happened 10,000 miles away from America?
Yes.
As well as how many billions of dollars went to Israel for the past 60-plus years and counting.
That's right. That's right. And you're right on point, Brother Adrian. And those are the positions that we must assert. We've got to assert those types of positions. That how dare you give reparations or whatever you want to call it to entities that you didn't do the harm to them. You did the harm to us, though. And see, just the one thing about Trump's administration that I like, for real, and that is in 2019, that administration or him or whatever you want to call it literally put in writing a proclamation that focused on the 400-year first slave ship brought to America. You see? They put that on paper, recognizing this. You understand? And so you don't see that with nobody else. Only us. So they put that on paper. And as a result, people ended up with the year of return. So in 2019, you had a lot of different groups and organizations that did the year return, went back to Africa as a part of the recognition that the United States and others put in place, recognizing the first recorded, according to them, by the way, slaves that were brought to America. And they said it. Now, we know that it had some stuff happened before then, but I'm just saying as a point of reference
They said that the first slaves were brought here with by them at that time. So again, no. See, that right there is not speculation. That's not an assumption. None of that. That's straight up. That's what they said, and we need to hold them to that. You see,
and John Baptiste, who still took that legendary picture where he showed the webs in his back, and how he took a picture of the damage of that slavery did when he showed the webs in his back. So that, you know, was also another symbol, and not only of the how they took us systematically, but also how they stole a lot of the inventions that we invented, all the conveniences that we're using right now in America, from the red light to the stop sign to gas masks and so many others that we invented in the 1800s, those conveniences that we're using right now that were stolen from our ancestors. That has to be addressed as well. So it's so much, but the problem with America is they don't want to talk to black people in America about reparations because they have to give up a lot more than what they gave to these other groups. They can't give us crumbs because they took the kitchen that we cooked our bread in.
Again, Brother Adrian, you are on point as usual. What we are now doing is making certain that we are organized. Again, one of the things that Baba Kwame Ture taught in a very simplistic manner, but some of us got it, we get it, and that was to organize, organize, organize. Now, some folks will hear these speeches or hear these things, and they'll clap, and they say, oh, that's wonderful, blah, blah, blah. Some of us do internalize these teachings. So now we're going to make certain that we organize, mobilize, strategize, et cetera. We're going to do these things. This is not just a conversation. And to give you a perfect example, when you get a chance, Brother Adrian, check your email, because I'm going to share with you from an internal structure. Sister Munir, are you still there? Real quick. Okay. Sister Munir, when you get a chance, you should check your email because I think you already have it. But Brother Adrian, you will be getting it if you don't have it. And it's an internal kind of communications which begins to convey some of the organizing that we're getting ready to do. And I will just share this one brief part of that because it'll be connected to some of our international work. And I'll just say this part of it. To assure that we reach the masses of our people as well as take this movement on an international level, we're getting ready for the, of course, for the We Charge Genocide 21 and pre-plebiscite summit. One of the things that's going to be introduced at the summit is our position on, one, we reserve the right, which makes certain that people know clearly that we must be able to select any kind of medication or treatment or whatever as it pertains to our health. So that's going to be presented. But here's the part which I'll share with all of you now, and of course our internal team will be able to see it more elaborately, and it's this. So that's something that we are asserting on the national level. We reserve the right. The other component for our international level is this, that there is a disease that is primarily inflicted upon black folks, people of African descent, of high melanation. But again, particularly people of African descent. There's a few other people that get it, but not as often. But some of them do, just not as nowhere near as much. It is called sickle cell anemia. So what MWM and Universal Movement and our related components will be doing in the very near future is creating a task force that begins to examine sickle cell anemia on the national level. And in doing so, become involved in the campaign and processes to bring about a cure and treatment. Now, note,
other groups of people do that for the various diseases or illnesses that affect them. Leukemia, cancer, other stuff that don't really affect us that much at all. They have specific campaigns for that. So now, as Black folks, there is a specific ailment or illness that affects us all over the globe. We are, if not the first, one of the first organs, movements that will now assert that there needs to be a task force that is primarily comprised of Black folks at this point in time to begin to examine what needs to happen for there to be a national, international campaign to address the issue of sickle cell anemia.
Yeah,
that's how progressive, yes, that's how progressive Million Woman March Universal Movements is.
And I remember when I interviewed Bobby Seale a while back, he mentioned how they had a campaign, one of the campaigns against sickle cell anemia along with amylases, because like I mentioned before in one of my commentaries, one of the diseases that we have that is unknown in the Black community is SH1619, which is self-hatred. Black people been taught since 1619. So we have to address some of those cures that we in our community that have been imposed upon us. And we got to keep in mind they have been imposed. And this is why I'm glad that somebody pointed out that we need a task force against some of these diseases that have been imposed. And then you have vaccines and the booster shots and all these other things. So we need to address some serious, serious critical issues against diseases that have been affecting us for several decades. And when you spoke about Kwame Ture and how some of the individuals that are Black who heard some of his speeches but didn't internalize it, and it brings up a sad point that when Kwame Ture, before he died, he was trying to raise money to try to, to be able to pay off his bills, when the Nation of Islam at his funeral had to raise $250,000 to get him out of debt. So yes, a lot of our heroes and heroines that we honor today, we got to internalize, because the individuals like Kwame Ture, individuals like Marcus Garvey, who had to fight to keep themselves out of debt, even though they poured and taught us so much. So we have to organize and internalize a lot of this stuff. And we need small group operations to expand them, so therefore we can be able to not only take care of ourselves financially, but secure and protect ourselves. And that's why I'm glad to be part of the New Black Wall Street Project here in Baton Rouge, where a chapter of that, because the headquarters is in Atlanta, Georgia, when I visited, where they created an economic hub for us to be able to invest and circulate economics in our community. And the gentleman who's over that part of it, one of his relatives, Louis Ali, my former co-host, he is buying up some land. He bought up several buildings near the area of Southern University, one of our great HBCUs, to help create an economic hub. And he's setting up where we're going to not only market and promote it, but also secure it. So we're working on those things to build some economic hubs so we could protect and secure and inform ourselves, so we can be able to support and give some sustainability to a lot of the worldwide movements like the Million Woman March and others.
Absolutely. Well, Brother Adrian, we are definitely in sync, on point, and you know, you, again, are one of the brothers that we really appreciate, and certainly will be continuing to build with and work with. But I want to also say that so folks will know, you know, how deep and how really committed and ready we are, you will hear us announce on or around February 28th, which is going to be when we kind of give some insight into what this year's 25-year anniversary is going to consist of. But you will hear the announcement for what we call our war chests, or chests. There's four of them. And again, we know now how to obtain the monies that we need to secure the work and the other things, the projects and so forth. You know, we don't want to be in a begging kind of position.
We've seen how that works. And unless you're connected to white folks, that really does not work. We see that now. That doesn't work. So we have to figure out how we're going to raise our own monies without selling out, without signing some contract or whatever, whatever. And we figured it out. And so we're going to let folks know what the plan is in terms of the establishment of our war chest. But again, these are things that they really took time to develop. And as such, to make certain that we're not in a position where we have to depend on anybody or anything other than ourselves. And even that's going to be, you know, selected because we have to be very careful with certain things. You know what I'm saying? And so we're doing that. But again, the Black Print Agenda 25 is going to really, you know, give some clarity as to how we're going to be moving forward. And also with whom, because what we've learned again is there's some areas of things that is going to have to be regulated in a certain kind of way. You know, as some people say scripture, but we know that there's this idea that was out there before scripture, and it's this. You can't keep giving or tossing pearls to swine. You can't keep doing that and think you're going to survive. So we're going to have to be very clear on some things. You know, there's some things that'll be for everybody or anybody of our people, that is. And there's some things that's going to be based on, you know, what you're about, what you're trying to be about, and so forth and so on. You know, if you're trying to be better or do better and help our people or whatever, there needs to be some other considerations for that. And for us, it's going to be. We're going to help our people to the best of our ability when it comes to the work that folks are doing or trying to do when it comes to our liberation and justice. We have to now structure it in that manner because we are in a serious phase of the war now. And that's why we're going to have a war chest, okay? Because, you know, in reality, that's what you do when you're in a war. You know, if you understand the nature of the game.
Yeah, you have to have a war chest because a lot of people are not aware that, you know, when we had the Dr. Martin Luther King holiday, a lot of people are not aware that, and of course, this is what I heard. I heard that Dr. King and SCLC had a stockpile of weapons because they were starting to come to the conclusion that, hey, we got to fight this war, and sometimes you can't fight in some of these wars nonviolently, unfortunately. Because we have an oppressor that has never understood, you know, being considerate of others and respect and things like that. So on certain levels, we're going to have to take respect. And this is why I'm glad to be a part of this global movement where black men and black women are able to fight for their liberation and an ongoing thing. And, you know, we can do it because we've proven before that we can work together and stand together and we can stand on our feet and not live on our knees. Because if you have to live on your knees, you won't be able to run. But we have to develop those tools because we have tools and we have people that are what I call succeeding in isolation. So therefore, if we could pull some of those sparks together, we could create this fire to be able to protect, inform, and be able to develop ourselves. Because we've done it before and we've done it recently. I know we can do it now, so we just have to keep pushing forward. No, it's not easy, but it is necessary.
You got that right. And yes, this is exactly what now needs to happen. Fortunately, we've had wonderful examples, and we've learned from some of those examples. But in doing it, see, again, we cannot play ourselves out of position. That's very important.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've learned is you can't jump out here in a certain way. You see, you have to be very strategic because if this government sees that you're prepared and ready to deal with self-defense and other kinds of things, you better make sure that that's in a formulated manner so that you are not put into an attack mode where even our people will be used to attack us. See,
Yeah.
See, that required
and keep in mind.
A whole. Yep. Yeah, yeah, that required a whole different kind of concept, approach, and whatever, which we're going to share in a very near future, because this is the kind of stuff that we've critiqued and analyzed. But you're absolutely correct, Brother Adrian. But what I can say is this: that a lot of things that you mentioned or that has happened was not sustainable.
Yeah.
Like you said, they've done it, but didn't sustain it. And
yeah.
Most couldn't sustain it even for a period of time. Like, you know, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years, maybe 4 years. But after that, it got destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, a more recent time in particular. So that's why I'm saying we got to be real clear that whenever the enemy sees certain things happening, they're going to do whatever they can to destroy it. And we need to be able to recognize the enemies within as well as the well-known unnatural enemy. See?
And don't forget, this organization, and speaking about how we got destroyed, a lot of people fall asleep on the fact that even though J. Edgar Hoover is not around anymore, COINTELPRO is a system, is still around.
Well, that's
and a lot
why,
of people
again, when you see the listing of some of the sessions we're going to be having for the We Charge Genocide 21 Summit in D.C. in September, one of those sets, because that's one of our 21 areas, COINTELPRO. But the session is going to cover COINTELPRO and black identity extremists, which is what they have today. See, and show people how the Patriot Act and Homeland Security. See, again, you had J. Edgar Hoover with the FBI, and he had his own little party and posse going on. So now what has happened, though, that has kind of changed a little bit, but now you have these other components, see, which is a little different. See, with the FBI thing, they kind of had the whole thing going on, right? That was like their thing. Now it's a little different. And by the way, here's a little trivia for folk. Okay, and we're going to talk about this a little more later. I think it's in March, but, you know, and maybe you might know Brother Adrian, but again, we'll be talking about doing one of our upcoming sessions. How did folks learn about COINTELPRO?
I heard, I don't know this for sure, I heard that members of some of the Black Panthers and other groups got into the offices, the headquarters of Chicago, and were sending the information.
Nope. I mean, that did happen too, but the first thing that happened was right here in Philly. Well, not quite in Philly, right outside of Philly. It's called Media, Pennsylvania, but it's just a hop, skip, and a jump. And what happened was, and this was really some white folks, because, you know, they was trying to act all radical and stuff too during the war time and all that with their little anti-war thing. Anyway, they broke into the FBI building office, the Pennsylvania office for the FBI, Federal Bureau, and they broke into that office. And in doing so, they was really breaking in for some other reasons and came across the papers, the COINTELPRO papers, right?
Yeah.
And that's when it was realized what this thing was. They seized those papers and began to then distribute those papers amongst the various groups and organizations that were doing certain kinds of work at that time. But the first break-in, at least according to what our research says, the first break-in, and if you go online, you'll see it, was a group that broke into the FBI headquarters right outside of Media, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philly. And that was the first time, supposedly, that actual papers were confiscated that showed detailed information about what they were doing under COINTELPRO. It specifically said COINTELPRO, et cetera, et cetera. See, we're going to do classes and sessions on this stuff so that our people that's with the We Charge Genocide 21 Project, they will know the specifics of what we're talking about.
And I heard, yeah, and how they forged checks, and among other things. As a matter of fact, they had a big special file just on Elijah Muhammad alone, where they surveilled his calls and all that for like some like 25 years. It was a white guy, a white guy who was a scholar, who put out a book, and the book was pretty thick. He said, well, why is this book so thick? He said, if I would have put all the information that I researched about how COINTELPRO surveilled just Elijah Muhammad alone, he said, this book would be so big, it'll take all of us in this room to carry it. So they've done some thieves, and still are a lot of the rap beefs, a lot of the gang warfare. COINTELPRO has been behind that as well. So, we have a long history to do that. So that's why organizing and sharing information with each other is so key and very important. So therefore, we won't go to war with each other based on misunderstood conceptions of us not talking to each other. Like Malcolm X and Dr. King at one time had a misunderstanding about each other until they talked actually to each other. And not having the media and COINTELPRO in this system taking small things and blowing it out of proportion. So talking to each other, having conversations and organizing with each other is so key, so we won't go at each other just based on misconceptions of what the other person said.
Right, that's right. So again, I'm going to send you some of the information that we have, Brother Adrian, because, again, this is a part of our study group and a part of our other kind of sessions. The break-in that I'm referring to happened in 1951. And so one of the reasons why I was able to see it is because they literally put up a plaque in media in September. To commemorate the break-in, right?
Yeah.
So again.
Yeah, that was the only way they were
going to
find out.
This is all documented. That break-in occurred, the kind of documents that were seized or taken, and then how that began to expose this thing that we know as COINTELPRO. So, again, this is some of the information that we're going to be examining for our study group session, as well as when we do the COINTELPRO forum and other sessions at our We Charge Genocide 21 summit, Reparatory Justice Summit, which is coming up in September. Okay. So, all right, Brother A. So you're back in Baton Rouge now, Brother Adrian?
Yeah, I'm back in Baton Rouge. I've been back for 2 weeks. I just went there for a couple of days to the ATL, to Atlanta, Georgia, but I'm still back and still going to be organizing.
All right. Well, definitely we will talk later on this week so that we can start setting up the meeting with the mayor there, because we want them, these mayors, to not only, of course, look at the task force for the issue dealing with violence and abuse, but also, of course, for the Million Women March 25. Because this is now a year-long observance, and part of this commemoration is the year-long celebration of the greatness and glory of Black women from antiquity to present day. So every city needs to highlight the Black women in their city that have made contributions. And
yeah, like Sadie Roberts Joseph.
That's what I'm saying, because we're going to compile a book that has history of Black women. And so every city is going to be asked to, you know, let's see the women in your city, no matter what year, no matter what century, whatever records you have of Black women and girls doing something of significant in your city. We want to see it. We want to recognize it. We're going to pay tribute to them. And do events relevant to the greatness and glory of Black women from antiquity to present day all over the world. You see, it's a year-long celebration. And so our anniversary reunion will be the kickoff for a year-long commemoration. We're not letting them get away with it now, this time. This time they're going to recognize. Believe me, I tell you. They're going to recognize. We're going to push the issue.
You see, because every city has black women in their city who are recognized from a historical perspective for their contributions, for their work. So we're going to make sure that that's now just not, you know, some stuck room for
Black History Month. We're going to turn into Black History Year.
Well, at least when it comes to, yeah, this is a part of our Million Women March 25-year anniversary. That's right. Salute to black women all over the country and all over the world. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a part of our 25-year anniversary. Oh,
yeah.
It's going to be fun.
and including some of the ones who did great things even while being in prison. Even while being exiled,
yeah.
Women like Asada
Absolutely.
Shakur. And so,
Absolutely.
You know, we never
Absolutely.
Want to forget about that.
Absolutely. And I'm telling you, Brother Adrian, the research and the information that I'm finding, I'm learning so much. I'm learning so much. I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. You know, and so that's why
I know.
This is so
Even
important.
Even though we've been around a while.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, there are things that people just don't share, information that is not being shared. And so, again, you know, if we're talking about the 1800s, the 1700s, and so forth, I recently learned about a woman in, let me see, I guess it was the 1800s, who inherited a jail, the property or whatever, from the slave master or the slave person that raped her. And she ended up inheriting it. I mean, stuff like that. It's insane almost. Some of the information that is now out there that, you know, you're not going to really know this stuff. And so we're digging it up, finding it, and wow. And then at some point we're literally able to compile it, put it in a book, and present it. And that's the way we are the ones who are making certain that we keep, distribute, educate about our history. We have to be the guardians of our history and the storytellers of our history and of our contributions and so forth. And so we shall. Okay? All right, family, listen, we are going to close this session up. We thank you all for tuning in. I want to remind you, as usual, of course, on Wednesdays. Oh, wow, they had an incredible session this past Wednesday. Brother Ray Ray and the Mackey Study Group, History Group, had another wonderful session. So they'll be doing it again in 2 weeks, I believe. Of course, so that's Wednesday. Of course, you can check out Community Cop on YouTube. And certainly Brother Mike is in the crew is always bringing some powerful, great information. Of course, on Thursday, Sister Keisha and Brother Ashe, Brother Ted with Thorough Black Talk every Thursday at 8 o'clock, of course, on YouTube as well. And Brother Lee Robinson on Sunday at 7 o'clock. For Africa on the Move. We are building our cadre again very soon, Brother Adrian. We will have our own YouTube channel for New Day Resurrection and also for the We Charge Genocide. We're working on several other new media outlets for some of the projects that we're working on. And remember, family, our war chest campaigns and so forth are coming. Again, we will raise our own monies. We'll be doing a lot of different things, including auctions. We're going to be asking some of our well-known artists, okay, to contribute to us some of their whatever, and we'll auction them off. We have our own plan of action. That's the point I'm trying to tell you. You know, we know what to do to get what we want, and we're going to do it. So listen, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is, of course, in the spirit of Ma'adenhotep. But remember, as we say, there can never be any real peace until there's truly some justice. And we're talking about Ma'atic justice. Again, truth, justice, balance, reciprocity, honor, those kinds of things are what we're talking about. Because you know what we say, Brother Adrian, if there's no justice, there's no what?
There's no peace.
is no peace.
All right. All right, my brother, again, thank you so much. Thank you, Sister Manira, as usual, and, of course, Dr. Frazier. And then we will be back next week. I think next week we might have Dr. Aleem with us, okay, Dr. Aleem Muhammad. I think it's going to be next Saturday. We'll let you know, but that's the projection. So at any rate, we love you all. We thank you all. And as we often say, Pomoja Trudashenda, together we shall win. Peace out. Yeah.